This is NBC Nightly News, Monday, October 13th, with John Chancellor reporting from the NBC News Center in New York.
Good evening. A gap appeared today between the president and the vice president, and the name of that gap was New York City. Over the weekend, the vice president said if the city gets its fiscal and budgetary house in order, the Congress could then move to help the city. Since Rockefeller was governor, while the city slid into the red, its default would hurt him politically. But today, the White House made it crystal clear that Rockefeller was not speaking for the president. Mr. Ford still opposes any federal assistance for the city. Here's more on that story from John Cochran.
Spokesmen for both men say Rockefeller was speaking only for himself, that his views on New York City's problems do not represent administration policy, and that he did not clear his speech with President Ford. Rockefeller's aides, always quick to defend their man's independence, say Rockefeller never clears his speeches with Mr. Ford. Still, there had been speculation that Rockefeller was acting as Mr. Ford's agent, floating a trial balloon to test public and congressional sentiment for federal aid to New York City. The presidential press secretary, Ron Nessen, says that's not true, that Mr. Ford still feels the city can solve its own problems without federal help.
President Ford believes that if New York City and New York State take those steps which are necessary to restore its fiscal responsibility and to clean up its fiscal mess and get on the right track toward balanced budgets, if they take those steps which are needed, then they won't need any federal bailout.
Two other Ford aides volunteered an unflattering explanation for Rockefeller's decision to support federal aid for New York City. The Ford people speculated that Rockefeller cannot afford politically to let the city go into financial default. The Ford aide said that since Rockefeller was governor of New York for 15 years, he would be hit with part of the blame. A spokesman for Rockefeller told NBC News he did not know why Rockefeller has now come out for federal aid to New York City. John Cochran, NBC News, the White House.
Governor George Wallace of Alabama was on the road today making his first trip to Europe. Today he began a tour which will take him to England, Belgium, France, West Germany, and Italy. Kenley Jones reports from London.
A mechanical problem aboard Wallace's chartered jet, the same kind he will use during his presidential campaign, delayed his arrival in London by almost 10 hours. Although the campaign has not been officially announced, that is the reason Wallace has undertaken this tour. He hopes to convince voters that he is knowledgeable in foreign affairs as well as domestic matters. And he hopes to prove that he is healthy enough to be president, as evidenced by this trip.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling fine. Not to have slept in it for a couple of nights.
Wallace will visit seven cities in five European countries during the next 2 weeks, meeting with political leaders and heads of state. Today, he went to the British Broadcasting Corporation for an appearance on an interview program and a news conference where he gave a British reporter an Alabama definition of détente.
I define "tarn" as a highfalutin word. They ought to say get together, you know, policy of trying to get together and discuss problems so that we might ensure world peace. But while we are having the so-called détente with the Soviet Union, we should recognize about what's happened in the past and know that when we are having talks with them that you cannot necessarily depend upon what they say.
After that, Wallace went to 10 Downing Street for a meeting with Prime Minister Harold Wilson, who arrived a few minutes after his guest. During their meeting, Wallace repeated his oft-expressed view that a strong NATO alliance is necessary to counter Soviet military strength. Mr. Wilson, of course, leads the Labor Party, a traditional socialist party.
But George Wallace did not leave his political savvy at home. Before he leaves here, he will also meet with the leader of the Conservative Party. Kenley Jones, NBC News, London.
An organization was formed in the United States today within the Democratic Party to try to get a woman nominated for president or vice president next year. Gloria Steinem, one of the organizers, said the odds are against a woman winning the presidential nomination, but she said it is clearly time when a woman as vice president could be nominated successfully. Also on the program tonight, we'll hear the president talking about the agreement to station Americans in the Sinai Desert, which he signed today. We'll have an exclusive interview with two of the Americans who are being held hostage by rebels in the wilds of northern Ethiopia. And this evening, we'll be taking a close look at some aspects of the energy crisis in the first of a series of special reports, which we'll be presenting this week. Those stories and others in a minute.
No, thank you.
If your dentures slip...
No, thank you.
...and won't let you enjoy the foods you like, you should see your dentist. But until you can try Ezo denture cushions, Ezo is the temporary aid that softens and fits into your denture for a hold so secure you shouldn't have to say no thank you to the foods you like.
Mmm, delicious.
Thanks to Ezo. Ezo denture cushions.
Good news from Oster.
This is the Osterizer, the original all-family blender. What's in it for you? Well, there's mixed drinks, chocolate shakes, ham and macaroni bakes, cheese dips, Swiss fondue, sauce for Western barbecue, hot and spicy apple bread, peanut butter sandwich spread, sauce with wine, sauce with mustard, and lots more. The secret of these happy blends? Controlled cycle blending. That's Osterizer Spin Cookery. There's an Osterizer model for everyone.
At the White House today, President Ford signed into law the congressional resolution that authorizes the stationing of 200 American civilians in the Sinai Desert. The Americans will help monitor the Israeli-Egyptian troop withdrawal agreement. Mr. Ford called the Sinai Agreement a significant step toward an overall Mideast settlement. But he said it is not an end in itself, and he pledged new American efforts for peace in the Middle East. Here's more of what the president said.
We must continue our diplomatic efforts with the parties in order to sustain the momentum toward peace generated by the Sinai Agreement. And the United States must accept the responsibilities which flow from our stake in peace in the Middle East.
The newspaper of Syria's ruling political party today charged Egypt's President Sadat and other Egyptian officials with lying when they said that Syria's President Assad is ready to meet with President Ford and to negotiate with Israel. In Lebanon today, five people died as a result of sniper fire and rocket exchanges between Christians and Muslims. More than 500 people have been killed in Lebanon in the past month, and compared with previous days, the past 2 days have been quiet. Richard Hunt reports.
When the Lebanese aren't fighting each other, they're selling things to each other. And it took only a day or so without heavy fighting to persuade the merchants of Beirut to open for business again. The first to venture out were the pushcart peddlers, who kept appearing all during the brief lulls in the fighting that shut the city down in the second week of September. By some unexplainable system of supply, fresh fruit and vegetables appeared on the street corner stands almost at once. Beirut's familiar traffic jam was another sign of peace for the moment. These jitney taxis carried people down from the mountains and back to work for the first time in 3 weeks. Some jobs and some businesses had disappeared, perhaps permanently. In this downtown area, the only job available was clearing up the wreckage. The fighting has stopped and started again so many times, the Lebanese themselves are skeptical about this truce. They know nothing has been settled, and it may not last. Richard Hunt, NBC News, Beirut.
The Chinese today are reported to have installed two intercontinental missiles in western China, missiles powerful enough to reach Moscow and other targets in the Soviet Union with 3 megaton nuclear warheads. That report in the magazine Aviation Week and Space Technology, which has a reputation for accuracy in stories of this kind.
Between Hamburg and Bremen in Germany, the tracks and trains are like nowhere else. Here, the tracks talk to the trains, and the trains talk to the tracks. Tracks and trains talk to each other in a computer-based control system created by the people at ITT. It's being tested by the German railways. In the ITT system, the train continuously reports its speed and location. And if there's another train ahead, the track tells it to slow down or even stops it automatically. When this ITT system reaches our part of the world, trains will be able to run more often, safely, on whatever line you take. and go a lot faster, too, as they talk their way down the tracks.
The beer and the burgers, the light and the noise.
That's three he's still here with the boys.
Oh, plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is.
Ah, those lovely bubbles. For aches and pains with upset stomach, Alka-Seltzer works fast.
Oh, what a relief it is.
For acid indigestion, try Alka-Seltzer Gold.
A big manhunt is underway near Salem, Illinois, for four escaped convicts. Along with a fifth man who was captured yesterday, they got out of the federal penitentiary in Marion, Illinois, on Friday night. They used a homemade electronic device similar to a garage door opener to swing open the prison gates. Bob Jamieson has more on the story.
It all began here at the Marion Federal Prison, a maximum security facility which is the successor to Alcatraz. The convicts, who had built a sophisticated remote control device, frustrated the prison's electronic system, opened three doors in a row, and simply walked out of the penitentiary. As police searched, the convicts held a farm family hostage, then stole their car. Yesterday, after the convicts left the farm, the stolen car was spotted near the small town of Salem. Police gave chase. The convicts' auto crashed, and four of them escaped into a nearby woods. The fifth, Arthur Mankins, convicted of murdering an FBI agent, was injured in the crash and captured. Still at large are Dennis Hunter, convicted of kidnapping. Henry Gargano, who killed two police officers. Edward Roach, convicted of bank robbery. And Maurice Fillon, also a bank robber. Federal and local officers sealed off a 16-square-mile area, farmland checkerboarded with unharvested corn and stands of trees dappled with autumn colors. Some families left their homes, others locked their doors and loaded their shotguns, usually intended for pheasant. And it was one of those shotguns and a barking dog that scared the convicts off when they approached one farm home during the night.
I saw them walk past these two windows and, you know, come up here on the porch.
Did they try to get in the front door?
They started to come up to the door, and then our dog barked, and one went one way and one went the other.
This morning, the police and FBI agents found two new sets of tracks, indicating that the four convicts had split into two separate groups which headed off in different directions. And the tracking dogs picked up strong, fresh scents. And even though there were no confirmed sightings during the day, the FBI says it is convinced the convicts are still inside the ring of agents. Throughout the afternoon, they made that ring smaller, but the convicts eluded capture. The FBI is confident they will not elude capture for long. Bob Jamieson, NBC News, Salem, Illinois.
Mayor Frank Rizzo of Philadelphia today underwent surgery for a broken thigh bone. The mayor was injured last night during a big fire at an oil refinery. He went there to help out, but he ended up needing help. A pipeline exploded near Mayor Rizzo and his group, and in the confusion, the mayor collided with his bodyguard, who is 6'8" and weighs 260 pounds. Lee McCarthy has more on the fire.
The first of nine alarms was sounded just after 6:30 last night at the Atlantic Richfield Refinery on the Schuylkill River in South Philadelphia. 350 firemen and 150 ARCO employees fought the flames for more than 6 hours before the fire was contained. This morning, firemen used water and foam to keep the fire in the pipe trench where it started, and in an adjacent 35,000-gallon storage tank full of an alcohol used in blending gasoline. There were only six injuries. The most serious was to Philadelphia Mayor Frank Rizzo, who broke his right leg. Rizzo's brother, the fire commissioner, explained how it happened.
There was a terrific explosion, a naturally human reaction to run, and the mayor started a run, and someone bumped into him, knocked him off his balance, and he fell and was injured.
The firemen had to borrow some equipment to fight the ARCO fire. The Philadelphia department had lost some of its apparatus in the August 17th fire that killed eight firemen at the Gulf Refinery nearby. This is Philadelphia's 20th major refinery fire in the past 10 years. Commissioner Rizzo and other fire authorities have given up trying to prevent such blazes. All they want to do now is contain them and keep down the loss of life. And this time, they did just that. Lee McCarthy, NBC News, Philadelphia.
Whether you drive in the city or under big sky, if you're a smart buyer, the tire to buy is Atlas. This brand has the smooth ride and mileage, oh yeah, plus sure-footed handling to get you there. That's Atlas. Especially when the roads are rough, Atlas tires show their stuff. Built to go where the going's tough. That's Atlas. Steel radial, belted, or four-ply. Where do you get these quality tires? At service stations near you. So be a smart buyer. Get Atlas.
Have you considered comparing whole wheat total with the leading natural cereals? You'll see there's a big difference. 1 ounce of fortified total gives you 100% of the recommended daily allowance of all these important vitamins and iron. 1 ounce of the leading natural cereals gives you no more than 6%. Check the vitamins and iron listed on the side panels. You'll see 100% versus 6%. That's the total difference.
For some years now, bands of guerrillas have been operating from the mountains of Eritrea, which is a province in northern Ethiopia. They have harassed government troops and positions. They have demanded that Ethiopia grant independence to Eritrea. The best-known guerrilla organization calls itself the ELF, the Eritrea Liberation Front. A month ago, the ELF seized two American servicemen, Navy technicians Thomas Bowidowitz of Jersey City on the left, and Army Specialist David Strickland of Orlando in Florida. It holds them as hostages while insisting the United States stop supplying arms to the Ethiopian government. A British journalist, Gwyn Roberts, managed to reach the ELF mountain camp where the two servicemen are held and has returned with this report.
The ELF is waging a guerrilla war of major proportions to gain independence from Ethiopia. In the countryside, their weapons are the gun, the mine, the ambush. In the town, it's assassination and kidnapping. For its part, the Ethiopian army is showing little mercy towards the Eritreans, in particular towards the civilian population. I have seen numerous villages which have been devastated. I've talked to many people who say their families have been wiped out. To underline the American involvement in their war, the ELF recently kidnapped two American servicemen working in a communications base near Asmara. The fate of these men is at this moment uncertain. After trekking for 5 weeks across semi-desert and mountains in Eritrea, I by chance stumbled on the village where these two men were being held captive.
My name is Quinn Roberts.
Tom Bowidowitz.
From Britain.
You're Tom Bowidowitz.
Bowidowitz.
And you're?
Dave Strickland.
Dave Strickland. How are you feeling?
Pretty good.
Fine. What do you think is going to happen now?
With us? I haven't the faintest idea.
Anyway, you don't have you any idea what your movements will be in the next?
No, we just, where they say go, we go with them, that's all.
Yeah. Are you particularly frightened by the situation you're in?
I was the first day, I'm not now. Because they treat us pretty good.
What sort of coercion was used to get you out of Asmara?
All they did, they came in, we were sleeping, and they walked in. And first thing they did, they shook our hands, and they asked us to get dressed and go with them. So we got dressed and we went with them. There was none whatsoever. There wasn't a gunpoint or anything like that. We just got dressed and we went with them.
In effect, there was no threat on your lives by the ELF at
Never.
This stage.
They assured us.
They assured us. They said, don't worry about it because we're not going to hurt you.
We were treated good. They're not really after the Americans. They don't have anything against the Americans. It's a sort of a protest against the American government.
The man who ordered the kidnapping is veteran guerrilla fighter Hamid Mahmoud Hamid. He's the ELF commander for the Asmara region and an expert in hit-and-run commando strikes.
We kidnapped them because they're specialists in helping the Ethiopian government and because the stand of the Americans is against the revolutionaries. There will be conditions on their lives. Our leadership has said it will demand that the American base near Asmara must be removed and American support for the Ethiopian government stopped. We are sending the Americans to the rear areas. We can only say that our stand towards them is tied to the response of their government.
Both men have now been moved to the ELF base camp area near the Sudanese border. They're sick with dysentery and have little medicine.
Eritrean rebels hold at least two more Americans in Ethiopia, civilian technicians who had been working for the U.S. Navy. They are, on your left, Steve Campbell of San Leandro, California, and James Harrell of Milwaukee. They've been prisoners since mid-July, and they are not at the same camp as the two servicemen. There's music on Broadway again for the first time in nearly a month. A musician strike ended last night. Four musical shows reopen tonight. The others start tomorrow and Wednesday.
After Homelite developed a chainsaw for $109.95, we tried to ruin it by doing things you shouldn't do. Because as America's largest maker of professional chainsaws, Homelite has a reputation to protect. And we're not about to let a saw out that can't stand up. So while the Homelite XL may be inexpensive, it's not cheap. Homelite, for the pro and the man who wants to cut like one. And now the $109.95 Homelite is just $99.99.
So much depends on you. So you have to be patient and understanding, and firm, and very loving. But to be so many things, well, you gotta be good to yourself. So I get my rest and exercise, and I take a Geritol tablet every day to be sure I get the iron and vitamins I need.
Geritol, more than twice the iron of any ordinary supplement, and some very important vitamins. Geritol, every day, because you've gotta be good to yourself.
In Paris today, diplomats from the rich countries and the poor countries agreed to hold an important international meeting in December to talk about oil prices, food prices, and relations between the industrialized and developing world. Oil and energy get into most discussions these days, whether it's the price of gas at the pump or the question of helping the poor. This program has been taking a long look at where we stand now in terms of the energy crisis. We have prepared five special reports on the subject, and we hope to show all of them to you this week. Here's our first special report from George Lewis on the oil and natural gas shortage.
East Texas, in the 30s, the biggest oil field in the world. Today, slowly drying up. And someday, not too many years from now, the pumps will have sucked the last drop of oil out of here. Nationwide, oil production has been declining about 6% this past year. So, the U.S. imports more and more oil to compensate. The country gets almost 40% of its oil from overseas, and the percentage is going higher.
We do have a shortage of American-controlled energy. As a result, we're dependent upon the cartel for their supplies, and they've taken advantage of us. They've charged the American consumer outlandish prices, but occasionally they threaten to cut us off. And the next embargo, as compared to the last one would look like a picnic.
A more severe problem, one the nation will have to face this winter, is a shortage of natural gas. Supplies will fall far short of the anticipated demand in many parts of the country, and there will be practically no imports to fill the gap.
We face probably the most serious natural gas shortage that we've ever faced in this country. The shortage is almost the energy equivalent of the oil embargo. This winter, curtailments of natural gas will be 40 to 45% higher than they were last year, and in some states where the shortage is focused, 96% of all industrial needs will not be met.
That means factories which cannot use other fuels will have to shut down and lay off their workers. And if it's a cold winter, the layoffs could be widespread. Energy producers and the administration argue the country must develop its remaining oil and gas resources as rapidly as possible, so we will no longer be at the mercy of the Arabs and the elements. It will mean bringing in oil and gas from Alaska, beginning 2 years from now with the completion of the Trans-Alaska pipeline. But the big source of new oil in this country promises to be offshore drilling. It could produce 3 to 5 million barrels a day, more than half the amount the country presently imports. Offshore drilling is controversial, pitting oil men against environmentalists oil-producing states against oil-consuming states. The debate illustrates how deeply divided the nation is on energy policy. There are potentially large deposits of offshore oil along the Atlantic coast, but the drilling has been held up by environmentalists who fear it will ruin eastern beaches. State and local officials say they want the oil, but not the problems that might come with it.
The onshore problems are far greater than the offshore drilling, because you just don't find oil, and then automatically it's refined and distributed. You've got to have tank farms, you've got to have transportation, you've got to have refineries. There's a multitude of problems that no one seems to want to answer.
Officials in oil and gas producing states disagree. They say the Atlantic states must begin offshore drilling immediately.
It's no longer a question of whether it's good or desirable. It's just essential. This whole country is going down economically, and really the safety of the country is wound up with the situation as to whether or not we'll solve our energy crisis. And we can only do that on a long-range basis by full development of our resources.
There are a few signs the country is beginning to take the energy crisis seriously. Gasoline consumption has leveled off somewhat, thanks to the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit and to the recession. Detroit is beginning to crank out smaller cars with higher gas mileage as the concept of energy conservation begins to catch on. Still, the energy experts warn the U.S. has a long way to go in the field of conservation.
A long way to go and not much time. Energy conservation will help for a while, so will new exploration. But scientists believe in the next 25 years, the United States will have pumped all of its oil and gas wells completely dry, and the country will have to look elsewhere for its energy. George Lewis, NBC News, Kilgore, Texas.
Our next special report will be about coal. There's an awful lot of coal in the country, an enormous amount. But there are also enormous problems in using that coal to end the energy crisis. We hope to have that story tomorrow. Until then, good night for NBC News.